So, I mean, if you want to start off, you can give your name and sort of what you do around here.
Are you a Roman Catholic?
No, I'm a Protestant. So.
Yeah, that's fine. Because whichever way you're saying, anyway, I may or may not use terms or...
Don't worry about that. I can get those. Okay. I can figure those out.
You sure?
Yep. I'll be good.
Okay. I'm known currently as Father Hugh Kiefer, Order of St. Benedict's, St. Benedict's Abbey, Atchison, Kansas. I was born some 82 years ago in Topeka, Kansas. Before I was two, we were living in Wichita. Before I entered a grammar school, we were in Ellsworth, Kansas. And when I was in first grade, we moved to Emporia, Kansas, where I lived until I graduated from college. My family was more or less affiliated with the Protestant Church. My upbringing was scattered, I think, because I had an older brother, 16 months older, and my parents would take us to Sunday school on Sunday and pick us up. My parents attended church regularly on Mother's Day and Easter. That's my memory. I was baptized by immersion in that church when I was 12 years old, which left an indelible memory upon me. But otherwise, pretty uncommitted, in fact, ignorant of the church. I can't remember what we did in Sunday school. And so I declared myself independent when I was in high school. When we moved to Emporia, my older brother's teacher suggested that my parents put us into the elementary school on Teachers College campus, which was a school for training teachers. And there we did get a very good education, never over 30 in a classroom, special teachers for science and music. And the class became over 30, one or more students would be either advanced or held back. Both of us were advanced. Also interesting, in Emporia at the time, the schools operated on an A and B levels. Those entering in the fall or enter an A level, and those entering in January would be B level. So we were advanced a half a year. We then moved to the public junior high school. When I was in eighth grade, this double system was canceled. So I was advanced once another half, so I was a full year ahead of my time. And I was slow, and I think in maturity, both physically and emotionally. Anyway, I was graduated from high school when I was 18 in 1944. So I entered Emporia State for 1 year until I was drafted the following September and entered the Army Air Corps in Shepherd Field, Texas, where I was employed in the personnel office of the basic training headquarters. I got that position because I could type 60 words a minute, which was for the Army, 35 was average. I had the opportunity of an early dismissal for returning to school. So I was discharged in December of the next year. Came back to Emporia and stayed through the summer of 1949. I was graduated in 1949 with two degrees. One's a bachelor's in mathematics, and the other was a bachelor's in ed for teaching. Yeah, you want all this stuff?
Yeah, yeah, this is great.
And so in the meantime, I was unaffiliated. I had planned to go immediately to grad school, University of Michigan, for doctorate. But in the fall, I had a fraternity pledge son who wanted to bring his girl to homecoming. She was in high school, so I said, Mom, I'll invite her. She did. A kid girl came, but her mom came. And I went to the football game with them because I had a date that weekend with a cheerleader. In the meat process, Mom suggested I come down and teach in Columbus, Kansas. They're in the southeast corner of the town, of the state. Population at that time was about 3,700. And I had the senior blues. Thought that'd be good for a year. So I did it. Spring, one of my students told me that his parents are working in Anchorage, civilians for the Army, and they suggested I might come up there and work for the summer, which I did. The Army, apparently, a recruiting lay people program for college students. So I worked in the Army, measure distances, and wonderful experience. Only two nights I'd ever had to use car lights going over mountains, whatever. Anyway, long story. So then I went to Michigan for a year, and I've never been able to recall how or when that I met one of my Army buddies who's a Jew from Boston. And so he introduced me to a group of friends he associated with. There were two sisters and a third girl. They had an apartment just off campus. One of the sisters was in his programs, how he got into it. So it turns out that this is one of those intellectual clubs that I had heard about, had never witnessed, probably never would again, which I haven't, and composed of graduate students, except one undergrad in English, I think, a couple who were out, not in school. And they were formed about half cradle Catholics and half converts. So religion was a great topic for them. And so through them, I got involved with Catholic education and was baptized conditionally by sprinkling, pouring, whatever they did. At Easter time that year. This is a culmination of a long history, really of interest, mostly subconscious. When I was very young, I had severe bronchial colds every winter. And the only thing that seemed to knock them was deep heat. And in those days, deep heat was at the hospital with a good German sister, with bare aluminum plates on back and chest, weighted on top by sandbags so it wouldn't short circuit, and connected by electrician's hooks to a machine.
Jeez.
And so I lay there 15, 30 minutes, I don't know what it was. But it worked. In those days, there weren't antibiotics or anything else. I was told at one time, apparently I had pneumonia and was going to have to go to the hospital. The Catholic hospital was about a block from where we lived. And so I was hesitant about going to the Catholic hospital, afraid I'd wake up in the middle of the night and see one of those nuns down there. But I went, and I think mother's cousin, who was an RN, stayed with me. And then when I was in high school, there were three or four of us guys who would often party together with our dates, which in those days was primarily dancing on the weekend. And invariably there would be at least one Catholic among them. It was always a girl, I think, which necessitated that we wait until after midnight to have a hamburger. And that depressed me too. So anyway, I took off from there. I had realized the second semester that I was really not into graduate work. I had a number of acquaintance friends in graduate math, two in particular who had done their 2 years coursework, and were going to drop out because they thought the dissertation was not worth it. And what I've read about, anyway, that a doctorate never pays financially, at least academically. So I went to see the head of the department, of course, never seen or heard about me, but I think we had 200 math grad students at that time. That's when the university was small, 23,000 in one campus. And I'd made had a C in one course. And so he said, you know, forget it. I had planned to go back to Alaska that summer, but a similar program opened in Maryland, and I'd always wanted to go to the East Coast. So I got this position at Aberdeen Proving Ground, in Aberdeen, Maryland, where it's an Army Research Center. And I was there, I went for the summer, but I stayed for another year, hoping to get back to Columbus to teach, which I did. There I was, like in the South, I guess. Not quite as bad, but the Catholics were not among the generally acceptable people. In fact, the principal's wife, I heard, was telling people, oh, he's really not Catholic. Anyways, a parish of 60 families, I think, which included a mission. There were three of us who had college degrees. So I taught there for 3 years, successfully. And the in summers I went back to Aberdeen because I needed to be with adults. By the time spring came, I was babbling like the high school kids. And so the department I was in, we were studying shockwaves from explosives. The group I was with did nuclear tests in the summers. So then the politics got messed up in the school board. The girl's phys ed teacher read in the paper she'd retired, so I moved on to Kansas City. They had just opened the junior high schools that year. They were not completely finished. I learned then that afterwards that Johnson County apparently had grammar schools of K through 8 and then one senior high school, or one high school. And that year they opened four elementary schools. Four junior high schools, so that the elementary for K through 6, and we were 7 through 9, and then high school is 10 through 12. So I did 1 year in the junior high, 1 year in the senior high, and it was time to get out of teaching. And so I started shopping. I ended up in Lynchburg, Virginia, because one of my best friends from the Army from college was there. He's a nuclear physicist. It was a nuclear division of a boiler company in Ohio. We had one of the earliest primitive computers there, a huge thing, which could not handle what our little laptop would do now. So anyway, there I programmed that computer along with others. I was doing, for a year, I was working on a program that was the influence of the cooling waters on a nuclear engine, motor, whatever you call it, engine. As the pumps would turn on or turn off, so the temperature would fluctuate, I think it was for up to a combination of 8 pumps. Interesting, we stood there and watched the printer say, look at her go. So all the time I'd been bugging, I guess, looking for another life. I'd read some Thomas Merton along the way. And when I was down in Columbus, I went with the a pastor, drove his sister and her husband, newlyweds. We drove, the four of us drove to St. Louis for their honeymoon. And I went to visit the Jesuit provincial there. I had the assistant provincial. And he said that would I would need Latin. I thought, well, that's no problem, because I played in languages. When I was in school, I had Latin, German, French, Spanish, and psychology. So I got a book out. Well, I'd read, look at it for a week or two, and gather dust, and I'd go back. Finally, I decided that was out of it. So I learned that there was a Trappist monastery in Northern Virginia. Are you familiar with Trappist at all?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I started visiting up there. The novice master tried to discourage me in every way not to enter. But I knew he didn't know. So the last ploy was that I'd take pre-sem Latin at John Carroll University in the summer. It's in Cleveland, which I did. We had quite a party up there, too. We didn't study Caesar's Wars. We studied Aunt Matilda's cow kicking over a bowl of beer. Anyway, something we could get into. So I came back and entered. Big going away with my parents. And the I discovered that, I didn't know at the time what it was. At the time I wouldn't have admitted it, what it was, I suppose. I didn't fit there. And it was 2 years after I left before I discovered some reasons. But anyway, along in the third month, I guess it was, I started having extreme headaches and being very weak. We had mixed them in the morning, which was a break from the rule, have bread and coffee. Most of the guys, the coffee was primarily sugar and milk, but I drank coffee. And then we had lunch or dinner at noon, and two things were on the table and two things were passed. We could take whatever we wanted, but we had one chance, so I started taking more. Evening was light. Life was not improving. So I went to see the novice master. He said, oh, but you're a perfect novice. And I said, Father, the only time I don't talk is when I'm unhappy. We had a sign language. We had permission to. This was, the Trappists were started in the 13th century, I guess it was, as a effort to live the rule as it's written, which says no talking, among other things it says. and there was no privacy. There was visual privacy, but no real privacy. We slept in dormitories, which had a little cubby hole, which was sort of like in a John's, best I can explain it. You know, it's visually private, but we had a 3x4 bed with a straw mattress, straw pillow, and a work uniform, or clothes. On Sunday, we had some 2 or 3 hours off, free. But there's no getting away from it. The fields are just covered with white. So finally, anyway, the prior would not, the novice master would not come to bless it. The abbot did. There was a neighbor lady who came to morning mass who had a mother sick in a hospital in D.C., so it was arranged I'd ride into D.C. with her in my nice summer suit. Turned out to be November the 11th, although I didn't know it at the time. We'd had a dusting of snow. And she dropped me off someplace in D.C. I didn't know where it was. But I got to the airport and flew. Oh, took a cab to the airport. We were going by the Lincoln, not Lincoln, the Washington Memorial. And all sorts of military milling around. I said to the cabbie, what's going on? He said, tomorrow is Memorial Day. I said, not Memorial Day. What's for Veterans Day? I said, oh. So they didn't have a job for me. I met one of the ladies at church. He said, oh, you've come back. I said, no, I'm just passing through. And she said, that's the reason we never pay attention to you Yankees. You're here today and gone tomorrow. Which that culture was very, if I get too long, just tell me, you can always cut it out.
You're fine.
The culture in Lynchburg, which is in the middle of Virginia, was quite different. It's family-oriented, period. It was. The telephone book, it was a population of 50,000, I think, when I lived there. Telephone book had three columns of names. And it might have two columns or two pages of some strange last name. Our computer operator was a native. And he told me once, he said, Louis, he said, you know, when you Yankees go off to college and get to be seniors, you get a job and you go to work. For us, we go to college, we graduate, we come home, walk Main Street looking for a job. We had in our math department at the company had a nice girl from who's a native and mathematician who was engaged at the time to a young man who's from Jackson, Mississippi. A wonderful guy. And she told me one day, he said, you know, Louis, said, I can't marry him. He'll come home someday and say, we're going to move to California. I can't do that. So she broke him. And, but I was one of the rare Yankees who socialized mostly with natives. And that was because my friends had gotten me a basement house. There was practically no apartments in Lynchburg. There was practically no middle class except our company came from the north. And so basement apartments were created. And I had a nice one. And so I was loading my dishes in the kitchen cabinet. Landlord's son came down the steps and he said his buddy's parents invited me over to a 4th of July party, dinner party. I didn't know whether that's Southern hospitality or what it was. I didn't learn until 9 o'clock when the widow from across the town, across the street came. We were the same age.
Mm-hmm.
So I was with that group of natives. I need to go back to my name. I'm sorry. I did this once over at the convent. I couldn't do it again, I guess. I was baptized Lewis. My mother always insisted that was spelled L-E-W-I-S, like my father's middle name. When I stepped foot on Emporia State Campus, I became Louis. When I stepped foot into the office in Aberdeen Proving Ground, I became Lou. And I was Lou until I came here and became Hugh. So, anyway, if the names confuse you. So, anyway, I thought that my religious vocation was finished. And I'm not sure that was a religious vocation. It was not mine. So, anyway, I came back home to find a job. In those days, it took about 6 months. Scientists and mathematicians were needed, and because this is the early... No, late 50s, early 60s, something like that. And sputnicking a few things around, I guess. So I was flying around the country looking for a job. I finally ended up in Bethesda, which is adjacent to D.C. Mm-hmm. And it's a division of Johns Hopkins University, operations research under contract to the Army. Operations research, most people never heard of. It has two descriptions, one being studying questions that have no answers, and the other, more sophisticated one, is studying questions that have overlap multiple areas of studies. The one I worked on for a year, worked with it, well, we had a PhD in physics, a PhD in history, and a clinical psychologist, an electrical engineer, and two of us mathematicians in this study. The question was, how many rounds of ammunition would be required to fight one day's battle, any kind of war, any place in the world? The boss we had had a reputation for closing out studies, which he did one day when he got us all in one office and said, nobody's leaving till we get these. So anyway, one day there was a knock on my apartment door. It was when the fellows had been a Trappist, where I had been. And Berryville's about 65 miles northwest of D.C. He was not permitted to make final vows. When he left, the abbot gave the names of two priests, local priests there in D.C., who had been Jesuits, Trappists. He remembered only one name, so I started visiting this guy. I lived a far more contemplative life there in a fairly expensive apartment than I've ever lived here. And this guy was really one. Great. He could read me. Had similar backgrounds. He was in physics, I think, or engineering, can't remember which now, but I was in math. Trappist. And one Saturday evening, I was driving over. I stopped at a traffic light. There was a light rain. I wonder if this really happened. It's always been so clear to me that maybe it wasn't over. So we started talking, working. Incidentally, I decided the reason I left Trappist is because of the lack of talking and lack of privacy. And so after we did some milling around for some weeks, he suggested if we were going to join a monastic group, you join a community, you have a vocation to a community, not to an order, like mm-hmm. Jesuits or Franciscans. So he insisted I start shopping. I started there in D.C. with an English congregation, and they had a booklet I found in the vestibule of the church, which called 5 to 9, which is supposed to outline a day in the monk's life there. But in the back of it, they had a list of all monasteries in the country at the mm-hmm. time. There weren't many of them compared to now. Mm-hmm. And so I found St. Vincent's in Pennsylvania, which turns out to be our mother house. I drove up there one Friday night. It was dark when we got there. I couldn't find the monastery. I just see a student. They had both high schools and college there. And this college student, I was on the porch, so anyway, I got him. He directed me at the monastery. I have no recollection how I found it. But anyway, when I got there, got settled in, I learned that the vocation director was out on a parish for some priest, broke a leg. And so my host was alumni director. So from Saturday morning to until Sunday noon, I never got inside the cloister. We ate with the high school kids. We had mass with the high school kids. And so anyway, we did have noon prayer in the with the monks. And then I got a short tour, and then I left. Mad as hops. farther I drove, the more relaxed I became, and I found reflection, I kind of enjoyed the life. So then I discovered this place. I grew up in Emporia, maybe. I told you that, yes. And my younger brother, who's 10 years younger, was getting married in Wichita on Holy Saturday. Incidentally, I'm the only Catholic in the family. And the at my niece's wedding, she insisted I be there, so I go to, people are looking at me. I was walking around outside trying to figure out what I was going to say in my white collar. And so I called up, I introduced myself. I said, you can tell by looking, I'm the black sheep of our family. We got along fine after that. So anyway, I'd arranged, my older brother was in St. Joe. And so I arranged to go to, come here after the wedding. In fact, Easter afternoon, they dropped me off here. I was here for a week. Both at St. Vincent and here, I had talked with the college presidents. Both had seemed to welcome me in the math department. So anyway, I came in at the about 3 o'clock on Easter afternoon, and the community was singing solemn vespers at the time, and I was taken. So I came back in August and quit my job. I really wasn't qualified for that job anyway. I didn't have the imagination needed for it. And so as I was telling people that I was leaving, they said, where are you going? In Kansas? Kansas? You've ever been there? I felt the same way. So anyway, the first year I was on the hill. You don't know about the, didn't the abbot speak of the hill? That was the second floor of the Ad building, the day of St. Benedict's College. And that's where possible vocations for the monastery studied for the first 2 years before they entered. So that's, I was there for a year with Latin and history, philosophy, and entered. And in those days, the normal entrance, because of canon law for ordinations timing, was at the end of sophomore year. So at the age of 35, I entered a novitiate with 20 or so teeny boppers, 20 or so. I had come from Jersey, and I had not left it. Now I came from Maryland, didn't I? Yes. And then transferred into the monastery. The because I'd already finished college, I did my 1 year novitiate and then started theology. In those days, we had our own theology here in the Abbey. Did the 4 years. And at that time, the probability of a new priest living in the Abbey was zilch. Because in those days, there was a monk on every floor of every dorm. There were at least a dozen monks living over at the high school. We had a lot of parishes around several states. I went to see the abbot my last year, to go back to college to get refreshed, and he invited me to sit down and talk. So it ended up, I went to Notre Dame that fall for an MBA. I didn't know how I would be able to adjust to priestly life, because I knew my I don't know what the word is, could not live as priests did in those days, where they were God's gift to that company. Always took the first in line, it's always, yes, Father, yes, Father. And so I learned, first year I was there, it was a 2-year program. First year I was there, I had only clericals to wear. We were a class of 30, at least we graduated. One Protestant, one Jew, and the rest of us Catholics. And any time one of those Catholic kids, they'd all have 16 years of Catholic education. Anytime they saw my collar or heard the word father, all sorts of things came out of the eyes. Hurts and pains and rejection. But we learned to live together. Yes. And we had a good 2 years. We were the first MBA class at Notre Dame. This is our 40th anniversary. They're having a big splash up there. The summer between, the dean of the business school wanted us to try to find employment to learn, you know, practical. And so I was taken into Purdue's business office, the training program they had for new employees. And no one knew why, including the man who took me in, personnel man. Anyway, so I was there that summer. They all knew who I was, but I didn't. The second year, oh, I backtrack. I came home that summer, first summer. I told the abbot I need something else to wear. So I said, well, go buy some clothes. So I did. And so the last day I was there, I put on clericals and went around and tell people goodbye. And there were four new employees, three men and one woman. And they gave me a Purdue sweatshirt, so going away present. And to top it off, the girl had sewed a white collar on me, which wouldn't stretch. Another good experience. So I came home, finally went to work in a college business office as controller. You know what that means? I didn't either. Controller, as I understand it, is the officer who runs the business office itself. The business manager and or treasurer take care of contracts, finances, generally, so overall big things.
Okay.
And so shortly after came, started work, the abbot came down on Saturday morning to ask me if I'd like to go to a little parish on weekends. I said, no, I really wouldn't. I'd like to help with a college chaplain. So that's what I did for my 12 years I was there. I did work, I worked 2 years at St. Benedict's College, and then we merged, and I was 10 years in Benedictine. 3.5 years for business manager, the rest of controller. I worked with a college chaplain. And had a very good relationship with students, I think. When the abbot asked me to go to business school, the thing that hit my mind was I would be cut off from students. As it turned out, it was just the reverse. And there were no connections of teacher-student relationship to interfere with. No. So I did that, and then I was off for a summer, try to recover my sanity. And then I took a refresher or two. I can't remember how many courses at the college in programming. And I went to work over at a high school. I was programming in Cobalt for alumni records. And then I conducted a class in math. Notice I didn't say I taught it. It was just anyway. So anyway, I came home, and since that time, basically, I've been here in the Abbey business office. 1 year, I went out to St. Martin's College Abbey in Lacey, Washington. It's contiguous with Olympia, the Capitol, which is at the foot of the Sound. And I was controller out there in their business office. They had problems getting an audit, which I was able to fix. One summer for 3 months, I worked in San Anselmo in Rome. You know San Anselmo? It's the house of studies for Benedictines in Rome. It's they do teach some classes, but primarily residence. and came home. And I, when I quit the college, I sliced it off completely. So I knew I shouldn't be messing with the students. So, anyway, 6 years ago, I guess it was, the basketball coach, whom I'd known as a freshman here when he was playing ball, he'd been risen to vice president, I think, of finance, I don't remember what, of Southwestern Bell. And he quit and came back to teach. He's got a doctorate in management. So he called me and asked me if I would be chaplain for the team. I said, well, I don't know. I have to think about that. So I told him, well, I'd try. First, the prior didn't want me to travel, thought I'd get too involved. It's probably wise anyway. So I was just the practice and at home games. First home game, I said, Coach, what am I supposed to do? And he said, well, you sit at the foot of the bench and I'll sit at the head. And if things don't go right, we'll trade places. At the end of the season, I told him, I thought a few times we should have traded places. So I was amazed how much I got involved or became involved with the student body as a whole. Mm-hmm. Because I was a public figure at the time. And I've always had excellent relationship with the man. The coach himself had always prayed with the team before I got there. And so we have mass about once a month. In the past, we've been about half Catholics and half non-Catholics. And they were asking, they could be Muslims, I don't know. This includes the coaches, one's Catholic and the other's not. But we all gather up. The first mass, I heard the guys coming in. I knew there was going to be a problem. So I walked out. I told them, it was just, this way I read it was discomfort. The kids not knowing what the hell was going on. It hurt stories. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I walked out and told them, well, you know, I understand if you haven't been at Mass before. I said, I'm a convert myself. And so if at communion time, if you're not going to receive communion, if you'd like for me to ask a blessing, you just come up with the rest of them, cross your arms, and I'll know. And every kid came up. Amazed us all. I still do. Each year at the new ones. Although this year have a fewer number of Catholics, at least a fewer number take communion. So that's where I am. I went for a number of years with, I got public participation. I am a recovering addict, 19 years. I was shipped off to a treatment center in Bethesda, Maryland. No, it was on the other side of D.C., it was part of D.C. At the time, I would have gone anywhere. I was in so much pain. And so since that time, I still have not done parish work, that sort of thing. I know with the previous prior who signs those things. He periodically asked me about going. One time, I just hit him in the front. He said, I know if I say yes once, it's going to be every week. And he grinned and said, yes. So a few years ago, I don't remember years, the abbot called me in. He was in the prior's office. I was just instantly walking down the hall and called me in and asked me if I'd be interested to go to the convent on Saturdays because the sisters considered that a community day. Well, we'd had chaplains over there for years, ever since the start, I guess. But our Father Benjamin had ear problems stuff, and he needed to get out, and there's nobody to send. The first announcements I understood was that the sisters would have no regular masses. We try to fulfill on special occasions. So anyway, I started doing that. And I was very close to the sisters in the college. We were very blessed with them. They all had doctorates and something or other. And so then I don't know, it's weeks or months later, they have called a number of us together asking if others would be interested in doing one day a week. So it's settled that there are six of us from Monday through Saturday, and there are four, more or less, who rotate Sundays. I always wondered how one priest could talk to the same sisters every day for 25 years. And I guess they wondered too. They appreciate it too. So anyway, I find great affirmation over there. And this weekend is homecoming. We have our alumni basketball game on Friday night. Saturday there will be indoctrination of three men into the Hall of Fame. And one of those had been in correspondence with me asking me if I would hear their marriage vow renewal. He said I'd married them, I don't know, which I don't remember. I'll never tell him that. They've been married 37 years. So I put together a service. We'll have that Sunday after the others. So anyway, I'm very punctual at choir, just physically. Doesn't mean I'm there. I try to be there. Very content here. Very accepted by my family. My brother, his wife, their daughter, and husband, and two little boys have come for years for Thanksgiving dinner. And at other times, the young couples come for basketball game. Mm-hmm. I was in Wichita for a retreat, addicts retreat we have every 6 months. And that Sunday, I always stay and have dinner with the family. And that Sunday, my great nephew is going to be baptized in his church. So I got to participate in that. It's by immersion, too. Yeah, fortunately, there are some Catholic churches that are finally turned to immersion. There's one in D.C., there's a black church there that had the tub right inside the front door, and then they had the regular, the children entered thing up there. So I don't know what you want, but you got more than you wanted.
No, that's great. I guess I just have a few questions. In this community, while you're here, what's day-to-day life look like?
You mean the schedule?
Yeah.
Okay. Weekdays, we have morning prayer at 6:20, which is really a combination of two. It's vigils that should be in the middle of the night, and morning prayer that should be in the morning. And that looks out about 5 till 7. Then we go to breakfast. And then we go to business, whatever that may be. We have very short noon prayer for 10 minutes at 12:05 to 12:15 to go to lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Weekdays we have Mass at 11:15, which depends on how many are there and other things. So time for dinner is at 6:55. And then we have... We run out?
No, you're good.
We have Vespers, evening prayer at 6:45. These vary on weekends. On Saturday, we have vigil service on Saturday night because we'd had Mass at 11. Let's put it this way. We have morning prayers are the same. Then we have Mass at 11:15, including noon prayer. And Vespers end at 5:30 and dinner. And then we have vigils for the Sunday after dinner. This gives a little extra sleep in the Sunday morning. Sunday morning we have just morning prayer at 7:20, followed by breakfast. Community Mass is at 10 o'clock, lunch at 12, no, noonday prayer. And Vespers at 5, followed by dinner at 5:25, and a free evening.
Okay, and then, you've been all over the place, but in your time here, can you think of any interesting characters that stand out?
Not a question of any, but which ones?
Yeah. And you can take your time.
It's good old Father Felix, zoologist, as I recall. One of the first PhDs, I think, in our community. He'd retired by the time I came. He was at, we have reading at dinner. And God love us, if somebody made a mistake in pronunciation, we knew about it from Father Felix. I served his mass a time or so, and he said, first we called the Alp, his white thing. In those days, it was like the Protestants. And anyway, slit down, we tie it. Naval construction. But he helped me a great deal, called me into his room one day to give me some tips on reading techniques. One that most everybody remembers is that Father Eugene, who was a PhD in biology, who I guess I find him most interesting because I'm reaching the age that he was, where everything was 25 years ago. And he had a good sense of humor. I don't know who else to talk about. Oh, our brother Vincent, of happy memory, worked all of his life in the print shop. And he was a Pied Piper for college students, at least for the men, when we were at St. Benedict's College. Because he was not a priest. He was safe. And he did a lot of good, particularly, I think, in breaking up drugs. We had Brother Paul, who ran the student roost, snack shop. He was probably more in with the students than any of the priests that were working there. He was one of those who died unexpectedly at the beginning of school. I hadn't thought about trying to reflect on this topic.
It's fine.
There was our Father Hilary Heim, who had a master's in math. He was academic dean when I came here. And a few years later, he resigned, went off to college, went for a doctorate in statistical studies. That's not the technical term. He told me later two things he thought he should get out of the dean's office, and secondly, the college needed the studies that he could do. But he came home, and there was no money for him. There was no job for him. So he did a bunch of clearing on old pig farms and put out traffic tickets and sort of other things till finally, I remember which abbot did, latched on to him and made him my business manager out of nowhere. And he was really fine, really great. Very sharp man. Very considerate of people. My first boss was Father Xavier. In those days, the college business office took care of the records for the Abbey business office, too. He told me one day that he had a master's in Spanish from Mexico City, someplace. And he was chaplain for a girls' high school in suburban Chicago when he got called home without a job assignment. So out of sheer boredom, he'd ask if he could run the posting machine at the time. Yes, well, he grew up from that. He had 3 summers in accounting at Creighton. He took over. And when I was in the second year, I was in business school, our accounting teachers assigned us to do a study of some company's financial records. He suggested I do the colleges. So I took him up to colleges. And unless you're in accounting, you'd have no reason to know that not-for-profit institutions had a radical different form of accounting than commercial school. So I took that up, showed it to this head of their accounting department. His job. I said, "You don't know how fortunate you have to have such a fine report." He said, "Very few people have that." So it was a good start. I also remember that in the fall, I guess it was, that I started work in the college. It would have been 69. This total, our student unrest started out with a brave march of candlelit procession from South Campus to North Campus. And this culminated in a mass. And I was asked to preach at that mass. The head of the student government came to see me. He said, I've been told you could preach. So anyways, I left the office to go preach. Good old Xavier said to me, "Don't preach any private opinions." I thought, well, that sure make me speechless. I knew it'd be a test. There'd probably be people there that hadn't been to mass for years, or maybe never had. But and there was a row of guys down there in front. But I think we managed. So when I was at Notre Dame, the 68-69 year, a lot of protests up there, and God, who was the president? Internationally known, except I can't recall his name. Anyway, he was always floating around the world. He did work for the feds, too. And so anyway, it'd be some kind of a protest, and whoever was in charge of running the college settled that with it, punishment, which caused another unrest. And so the real man flew in overnight, compromised, and flew out that piece. I saw a picture of him the other day. He was a famous man. I saw him once. I can celebrate a mass with him and some other members of their community. There was a lady in Chicago. I guess she and her husband ran a travel agency. And each gave $2 million to a college. She gave her $2 million to Notre Dame, $1 million to build a graduate building for the business, and the other to endow a chair of travel. And so that spring there was a great celebration, dedication of this building. Seen the light. Because a week before the dedication, that building was just surrounded by mud. But that day there were 3-foot hedges all around. There was grass everywhere. There was a 30-foot tree in the courtyard. It's all from their own farm. Anyway, Hesburgh, that's it. Father Hesburgh. He was the celebrant for the mass of the dedication. And each one of us students was hosting the college president. Mine was president of SLU. But anyway, I got to come celebrate that mass with them. And he picked up and left.
What are some of your favorite memories from your time here?
Favorite memories?
Yeah, that you haven't stated already.
I don't know if I have any.